Want consistent color for every job? Mylow's Pro Rewards members get a 20% paint discount on future purchases after paint annual qualifying spend reaches $3,000. Plus, order eligible in-stock paint and paint supplies by 2 p.m. for free same-day delivery by 8 p.m. Improving is easy at Lowe's. Excludes spray paint and mist tints. More exclusions, terms, and conditions apply. Subject to change. Details at Lowe's.com/terms. Same-day delivery valid in select zip codes. Subject to driver availability. Details at Lowe's.com/same-day-delivery.
Hey, welcome back, everyone, to the channel. Tonight, we have a terrifying story about this guy who planned out this really simple solo overnight camping adventure in the state of Colorado, over in the Rockies. But what happens when shit hits the fan? Well, you can't call Sam and Dean Winchester now, can ya? 'Cause they stopped filming. Sounds like you're SOL, buddy. Make sure to like, comment, and subscribe. And enjoy tonight's story. I don't camp alone anymore. I know everyone says that after a bad trip, but I mean it. I'm not doing the maybe next summer I'll try again thing. I sold my backpacking gear. I flinch when I see those influencer photos of some guy in the hammock between two fir trees with a caption like, "Home for the night." Because when it's actually dark and you're actually alone, and the nearest help is a 2-hour hike and a dead phone away, home is only as safe as whatever decides to leave you alone. I learned that last September in the Rockies. It was supposed to be a quick solo overnight. Nothing extreme. Just one night out to clear my head after a pretty rough month. Breakup, job stress, the usual, maybe my life is quietly falling apart, pile up. I drove up from Denver on a Friday, up 36 and then onto a smaller county road that always feels like it shouldn't be two ways. I hit the trailhead late afternoon. I'm not going to name it because I still have friends who go there. But if you know the Front Range, you'll recognize the setup. Gravel parking lot, brown forest service sign half peeled, bear warnings stapled everywhere. A pit toilet that always smells like someone tried to light it on fire and gave up halfway through and just walked away. The lot had maybe 4 cars when I pulled in. A Tacoma with a roof rack. A Subaru with 3 faded National Park stickers. An old Civic with a cracked taillight. And a white Jeep with an out-of-state plate, dusted in red dirt like it had been all over Utah. Inside the little wooden kiosk, there was the usual spiral-bound trail register with a chewed-up pen on the string. I signed in with my normal small handwriting. Name: Alex M. Party size: 1. Destination: Upper Creek Meadow. Nights: 1. At around 5 miles in, nothing crazy, but enough that you're past the day hikers by the time the sun goes down. The air had this early fall feel. Warm when you're moving, cold as soon as you stop. Aspens already turning lower down, patches of yellow between the darker pine. The air smelled like dust, sap, and that faint old campfire smell from rings people didn't quite extinguish. The first couple miles were easy. Graded switchbacks, the usual exposed routes, every rock more or less where you would expect it to be. I passed one couple on their way down, both flushed and talking loud like people do when they're trying to ignore how tired they are.
"Still headed up?"
the guy asked when we crossed. Yeah, camping at the meadow, I said, hitching my pack up a little higher that made me look more experienced. He made a face.
Cold night for it.
That's the idea, I said. I tried to sound casual instead of like someone whose last big trip was a camping weekend with too much beer and not enough water. Past them, their voices got shallowed fast. It went back to the kind of quiet that isn't really quiet. Wind in the needles, a bird yelling off somewhere, water way down under everything. The last mile climbs into thicker forest. The trail narrows and starts to feel more like a path one person keeps alive out of stubbornness. Fallen logs cut out of the way, that sort of thing. At one point, I passed a trail marker. Brown post, reflective strip, black stenciled number 428. I remember because I took a picture of it, thinking I'd send it to a friend later with some dumb caption. It ended up being the last photo on my phone before everything went sideways. By the time I reached the meadow, the sun was sliding behind the ridge. The light went from gold to flat in the time it took to shrug off my pack. Upper Creek Meadow isn't dramatic. It's just a wide, flat clearing with waist-high grass, a narrow creek along the far edge, and a ring of dark timber around it like a wall. Someone had built a small stone fire ring years back, but there was no recent ashes. No voices. No tents. No clink of someone cooking. That should have been my first hint. It's a popular spot. On clear weekends, you usually see at least one other group tucked away along the edge. I told myself I had just gotten lucky with timing. I set up near the tree line. Not too close, not too far. Ultralight tent, low profile. Sleep pad. Bag rated to 10 degrees, I'd never actually tested that low. The creek was just loud enough to be soothing. I boiled water, poured it into a bag of freeze-dried chili mac, and ate, sitting on a flat rock while my breath started to show in the air. It felt good. Simple. No notifications, no emails. Just the creak and the occasional crack of something in the brush that I assumed was a squirrel. Or pretended to be a squirrel, anyway. I stayed out until the sky went from dark blue to black, and the stars popped on one by one. You could see the faint smear of the Milky Way. Somewhere to my left, an owl made that low, muffled call that always sounds closer than it really is. When the cold finally slid under my jacket and into my sleeves, I put out my little fire, stirred the coals, double-checked that they were dead, hoisted my food up into a bear bag, and crawled into the tent. I'm not new to camping. I know the usual line. It's more dangerous walking around downtown at night than it is to be out in the woods. Most noises are nothing. The scary stuff lives in your head more than outside it. I believed that right up to the point I woke up and heard someone breathing outside my tent. At first, I thought it was the wind. That hazy state, where you're half in a dream and half back in your body, had me for a few seconds. In the dream, someone had been standing in my apartment doorway, saying my name. In real life, there was a sound right by my ear, through the thin tent wall. A slow drawn in. A slower, wetter exhale. I froze. Every instinct I had, childhood monster in the closet instinct. Adult, am I about to be on the news instinct. Snapped awake. I didn't move. I didn't swallow. My eyes were open, staring into dark so complete I couldn't see my own hand in front of my face. The faintest gray patch on the ceiling told me where the tent roof was thinner. The breathing came again. In, long, steady. Out, rough. Like it had to push through something on the way. It wasn't my breathing. Mine was tiny and shallow in my own ears. I waited for footsteps. A twig snap. Anything to tell me where it was or what direction. Nothing. Just that breathing, the distant ribbon of the creek, and my heartbeat slamming so hard I could feel it in my teeth. I told myself it was a bear. You reach for that most normal explanation first, even when every part of you is screaming that something is off. Except a bear makes noises. It snuffles, shifts, puts weight down. You hear the ground compress. You smell it. Whatever this was stayed at the same height for a long time, head level, inches from the mesh. I felt like someone was kneeling right outside the tent, face close enough that if the fabric wasn't in the way, our noses would almost touch. I tried to remember all the advice I had soaked up from articles and those laminated pamphlets at the ranger station. Make noise. Make yourself big. No, that's for cats. Don't run. No, that's for bears. Play dead. No, that's for... The breathing stopped. For a moment, relief hit me so fast it made my arms tingle. I thought it had gone. Then I heard the zipper. Just one or two teeth. The faintest, slowest drag of metal on metal from the tent door. I clipped the zipper pulls together with a small carbiner out of habit. It wasn't locked. It wouldn't have stopped anyone who really cared. It wasn't moving enough to open, anyway. Just tugged. A careful pull. Then another. Pull. Stop. Pull. Stop. My hand finally listened to me. I slid it very slowly into my sleeping bag pocket until my fingers wrapped around my headlamp. I didn't turn it on. I just held it like a weapon, which is ridiculous because aluminum and plastic aren't doing anything to a bear or a person, but it made me feel less useless. The tugging stopped. Silence sank back in. The creek went further away somehow, like someone had turned it down. I laid there and counted in my head. 1 to 60. Then again. By 300, my legs were shaking from staying rigid. No more breathing. No more zipper. No footsteps. Eventually, my brain started trying to talk me down. Maybe it was just the wind pushing the fabric just right. Maybe I'd been half asleep and misheard my own breathing against the tent. I really, really wanted those explanations to be true. Bad enough that I forced myself to sit there and believe them for a while. I don't know how long I stayed awake after that. An hour, maybe more? Long enough for the cold to settle all the way in and for the pins and needles to creep down your arms. Long enough that my body overruled my brain and dragged me back under into a jittery, shallow sleep. When I woke up again, it was to something circling the tent. It started as a faint swish through the grass, a dragging sound, like someone pulling a heavy rope in a wide arc. It moved slowly, too slowly to be casual. I flicked my eyes towards where my phone was in the mesh pocket. The screen was dark. My brain wanted the time desperately, like knowing whether it was 2 a.m. or 4 a.m. would change anything, but I couldn't make my arm move more than an inch. Whatever it was made a full circle. I heard it pass the head of the tent, then the left side, then to the foot, then to the right. I thought it would break pattern at some point, stop and press against the wall or lean in. It didn't. It just kept going, round and round, flattening the grass. There was no panting, no animal sounds, no jingle of gear like another camper. Just that drag and the occasional faint click under it. Claws on rock, maybe. Or bone on bone. I honestly don't know. On the third circle, it clipped the stake by my feet hard enough that the tent fabric twitched against my toes. I bit down on the inside of my cheek to keep from making a noise. Blood came immediately, metallic at the back of my throat. I tried to think like a rational person. If it was a bear, I had bear spray in the side pocket. If it was some lunatic, I had a knife. Somewhere. Assuming I didn't fumble it and stab my own hand in a panic. The circles kept going. 4, 5, 6. Then it stopped. The dragging sound ended at the head of the tent. Whatever it was settled there. I didn't hear it crouch. The sound just cut off, like it had reached the exact point it wanted. I didn't breathe. The breathing came back. This time, it was right above me, closer than before. I could hear fluid in it, something wet catching in the airway, rattling on its way out. I don't know what finally flipped the switch. Maybe the picture in my head that the zipper moving again and a hand slipping in? Maybe the idea that if I just laid there, I'd never move again. I snapped my headlamp on. The tent lit up in hard white. Instinct made me look straight at the mesh. There was nothing there. Just the pale fabric and faint outlines of trees beyond, black shapes against an early hint of gray. The breathing didn't stop. It kept going, but now the air in the tent felt heavier, sour. Like the exhale was happening with me instead of outside. I squeezed my eyes shut and clicked the lamp off again. It was a stupid move, I know. The dark felt safer than seeing nothing.
"Go away,"
I whispered before I could swallow the words. The breathing cut off mid-inhale. Silence slammed back in. No wind, no creak. For a few seconds, it felt like the whole meadow was holding its breath. I stayed there with my muscles locked and my jaw clenched hard enough to make my temples throb. I wanted to unzip the tent, jump out, and run straight down the trail with the lamp on full blast until I hit the parking lot. At the same time, the idea of stepping outside that thin layer of nylon made my stomach twist. In the end, I didn't do anything. I just stayed. Waited. Listened. At some point, the sky started to lighten. The ceiling shifted from black to dark gray to washed out pre-dawn blue. The cold inside sharpened. My breath showed in faint clouds. I hadn't heard it move away. No more circling, no more dragging, nothing. That was almost worse. When the light was finally bright enough that I could see my hand clearly without the lamp, I made myself sit up. My pack was still at my feet. The zipper pulls were still clipped together. My boots were where I'd left them, in the little vestibule. I took a breath, unclipped the carbinger with my fingers that wouldn't stop shaking, and peeled the zipper down an inch at a time, expecting something to grab me. Nothing did. I pushed the flap open and stuck my head out. The meadow looked normal. Grass beaded with cold dew, steam rising faintly where the first light hit, trees standing dark and still around the edges. No bear, no person, no obvious tracks. For a second, I honestly thought I had some kind of panic episode. Sleep paralysis, maybe? Something my brain cooked up? Then I saw the circle. From inside the tent, it had been just a feeling. From out here, it was clear. A ring of flattened grass all the way around my campsite, about 3 feet out from the tent, in a nearly perfect loop. The blades were all bent in the same direction, like something had slid along them over and over again. There was no boot prints in the dirt crossing it, no animal tracks I could see at a glance. Inside the ring, the grass was upright. Outside, upright. Just that band pressed down. I walked it twice, slowly scanning for anything. Paw marks, claw marks, drag marks. Something. My stomach felt like it was hanging a few inches below where it should be. I crouched and ran my fingers over the flattened grass. It was cold and damp, but not crushed all the way to the soil. Whatever had moved there hadn't been heavy in a normal way. "Okay," I said out loud. My voice sounded wrong in an open space. "Okay. Nope." I tore the campsite down in record time. The careful folding I usually do turned into cramming. Tent, pole, stakes jammed into the stuff sack, sleeping pad half rolled. I burned a couple of minutes just dropping things, my fingers fumbling buckles. Every few seconds I had to look up and sweep the tree line, sure to see someone standing there between trunks. I kept thinking of a face at the tent wall that I somehow hadn't seen. The woods stayed empty. The creek noises, which had been calming the night before, now sounded like it was covering something. Every splash felt like it was hiding another sound underneath. I skipped breakfast, shoved a protein bar into my hip belt pocket, and shouldered my pack. To leave the meadow, I had to step across the ring. It felt like stepping over a line someone had drawn on purpose. I did it anyways and hit the trail at the first walk. The forest felt wrong. I'd done that route before. It's not a claustrophobic tunnel. The trees aren't that close together. There are gaps, views of the valley, birds, chipmunks, normal mountain stuff. Not that morning. The quiet from the middle of the night hadn't gone anywhere. If anything, it was thicker. I didn't hear a single bird, no insects, no underbrush rustle that wasn't mine. Every once in a while, I'd catch a faint sound of something moving parallel to me, off to one side. Not crashing through branches, just there, keeping pace. Whenever I stopped and turned towards it, it stopped too. I told myself it was my own noise echoing, steep slopes bounce sound in weird ways. That's true. It just didn't make me feel any better. I checked my phone once. No signal, which I had expected. But the battery icon was lower than it should have been, around 60% when it had been fully charged that morning. I locked the screen and put it back without looking at the time because the number wasn't going to help. The first thing that told me this wasn't just nerves was about a mile down. There's a spot where the trail crosses a tiny side drainage. Usually it's a shallow trickle you can step over. That morning, it was dry, just rocks and dead branches. What bothered me wasn't the lack of water. It was the log. Someone had dragged a deadfall tree across the trail here. Not at a random fall angle. This was perpendicular across the path from edge to edge, like a barricade. Strips of bark were scraped clean where it had been pulled. I hadn't stepped over that log on the way up. You remember obstacles like that when you're slogging uphill, especially when you're out of shape and mentally counting anything that slows you down. There was no boot prints in the dirt around it except mine from yesterday heading up. Where the log crossed my tracks, the soil was scuffed in a way that didn't match feet or hoofs. It had been moved there after I had passed. I stood there staring at it, feeling the skin on the back of my neck tighten. Climbing over it meant turning my back on the slope below and the slope above. I really, really didn't like that. Going back to the meadow wasn't an option. I planted my hands on the trunk and swung my leg over. The wood was cold and faintly sticky, like sap that never quite dried. Halfway across, the dragging sound started again. It came from the slope below the trail this time, moving uphill towards me. Same slow scrape, same faint click sounds under it. I froze, straddling the log. My brain screamed, "Don't look down!" The sound stopped right under where I was sitting. Something shifted its weight. The log vibrated, barely under my palms. I didn't think after that. My body took over. I pushed off hard and threw myself over the far side of the log, landing crooked and jarring my knees. Gravel slid under my boots. I scrambled up the trail on hands and feet, expecting fingers or teeth or something to close around my ankle and yank me backwards. Nothing grabbed me. I didn't look back. I couldn't. I felt like if I gave it shape with my eyes, it would have the shape forever. The sound kept pace for a while. I could hear it now and then, off to the side. Drag, drag, faint clicks, always just outside my peripheral vision. By the time the trees started to thin, and the first sliver of the parking lot came into view through the trunks, my shirt was plastered to my back with sweat, and my hands hurt from clenching my poles. I saw the white Jeep first. From a distance, it looked the same as the day before. Out-of-state plates, red dust, little laminated pass on the dash. Then I got closer and saw the handprint on the rear window. It wasn't bloody or dramatic. It was just a perfect handprint in condensation, fingers spread wide, pressed from the inside. The glass around it was clear and dry. The early air was cold, not humid enough for fog on its own. It hadn't been there the night before. I'm sure of that. I had parked close enough to see. I slowed without meaning to. My eyes traced it. The fingers were long, longer than they should have been for a normal hand. The tips almost reached the edge of the window. The driver's door was locked. I checked. The keys weren't visible on the seats. No backpacks, no jacket tossed in the back. No one inside. The Tacoma and Subaru were gone. Only the Civic, the Jeep, and my car were in the lot now. That's when the pacing stopped. For the first time since leaving the meadow, the woods behind me went flat. Not quite in the normal sense, just empty. No wind, no shifting branches, nothing. Every nerve in my body lit up. I told myself I was nearly safe. That the parking lot meant other people, even if I couldn't see them. That whatever had followed wouldn't step out into the open. That's when it hit me. I didn't get any warning. No growl, no shout, no, "Hey!" 1 second I was fishing my keys out of my pocket between my car and the Jeep. The next, something slammed into my back hard enough to knock the air out of me and bounce my head off of my own door. My forehead hit the glass. White flashed across my vision. My knees folded and I went down, cheek against cold metal. There was weight on me, but it didn't feel like a person dropping onto my back. It didn't feel like a bear either. It wasn't a solid pin. It pushed around me and down at the same time, like wet fabric piled on and then pressed. The air went sour, heavy, the same way it had in the tent when the breathing was right above me. Something cold slid under the collar of my jacket and along the side of my neck. Not claws, not teeth. Thin. Too many points of contact at once. Fingers. If fingers could move in separate directions at the same time. It made a sound I didn't recognize. Not a shout, more like a choked gasp. My hand hit the gravel. Instinct closed around something hard and irregular, a rock about the size of a lemon. I didn't think. I just swung it backwards and up at whatever was on me. The impact was wrong. I expected to hit something solid, bone, muscle, anything. Instead, the rock pushed through resistance that gave and then snapped away, like shoving into thick slush. There was a damp, tearing sort of feeling through my arm more than an audible sound. The weight on my back ripped away so fast I almost fell backwards. I rolled over, vision swimming, and I saw it. It was half under my car, like it had been pressed into the shadow beneath it and was trying to pull itself entirely inside. Part of it was flat against the ground, stretched out thin like something poured. Part of it rose up in a narrow column that bent and unbent into too many places. Limbs folded into the main body and slid out again somewhere else, like it didn't have joints where they should have been. The surface was pale, almost reflective, like skin that never saw sun, molted with dark patches where the light hit it. The chunk where I had hit it was hanging open. The edges trembled like they were trying to close. Inside, there wasn't organs. No blood in a way you would expect. Just layers of the same pale material, shifting slowly over itself. Where its face should have been, there wasn't one clear shape. There were shallow hollows that twitched at random. Like it kept trying out different arrangements. They opened and closed on their own. When one widened, I saw rows of small, flat teeth set directly into the flesh, not in any kind of jaw. As the light hit it, the spots the sun touched directly darkened, spiderwebbing with thin cracks. The surface twitched away from the brightness, like it was trying to get back into the shade. Every part of it folded inwards at once. The rising column collapsed. Limbs, or whatever passed for limbs, pulled tight. It flattened in a way that didn't look possible. Then it slid. It pressed itself against the asphalt and gravel and moved under the car in one smooth motion, like spilled paint running downhill. No scrape, no drag, no sound at all. By the time I got my feet under me and stumbled to the other side of the car, it was gone. No shape, no smear, no residue. Just the underside of my car, the gray gravel, and the trees. The handprint on the Jeep had changed. The clear shape from a few minutes earlier was smeared down now, drawn out into long, uneven streaks, like someone had dragged their fingers downward in a hurry. The rock I'd grabbed was nowhere in sight. I know that sounds like I'm adding flair, but I really did look for it. It just wasn't there. I unlocked my car with hands that wouldn't stop shaking, climbed in, and hit the lock button 3 times, even though once was enough. The engine turned over on the second try. I reversed out of there too fast, gravel spitting from under the tires. All I could think about was going forward, not down. I kept expecting to feel the wheels bump over something soft and slick and hear it wrap around the undercarriage. They didn't. The rough road out meant every rock felt like hitting something anyway. I didn't stop until I got to the main highway. Even then, I only pulled over because I realized I couldn't feel my fingers around the steering wheel anymore. The rest is less dramatic, but still messed up. I went to urgent care that afternoon because my head hurt and I kept losing words mid-sentence. Mild concussion. Bruising across my back and shoulders in an uneven pattern the doctor couldn't match to anything normal. He asked if I had been thrown off a bike, which I guess was the closest thing he could think of. I went back up a week later to talk to a ranger. I almost turned around halfway there, but I didn't want that meadow in my head forever with no one else knowing. Trying to say it out loud to another adult made me feel insane. When you describe it, breathing outside the tent, grass circle, something flattening under the car, it sounds like the rambling comments under a YouTube video, not something that happens to a regular guy. The ranger listened politely. He wrote things down. He nodded a lot. I could tell the exact point where I lost him. They found the Jeep owner eventually. Not on the trail. He turned up miles away on a different forest road, walking barefoot along the shoulder at 3 a.m. His clothes were inside out. His fingers were torn up like he had been digging them into something rough for hours. According to the ranger I ended up drinking with a month later in Lyons, the guy wouldn't talk about what happened. Wouldn't answer questions about where he had camped or why his Jeep is still at that trailhead. The only thing he kept saying over and over was, "It follows the line. Don't step over the line. Don't sleep in the line." Whatever that means. The official version in the incidents binder will say, "Possible wildlife encounter. Disoriented hiker. Environmental stressors." I've seen enough of those reports to know the language. From the outside, I probably look fine. I went back to work. I still go up to Estes sometimes to meet friends for a beer. I just don't go past the end of the pavement anymore. I moved departments. Gave up my little top-floor studio for a second-floor place with neighbors on both sides and someone walking past my door every evening with a dog that wears dog tags loud enough to wake the dead. I sleep with a fan app on my phone now. Not because it relaxes me, but because if something starts breathing next to my face, I want to be sure I'm really hearing it and not just chasing ghosts in silence. For a while, I thought distance helped. Enough nights in a real bed, enough normal sounds, and your brain starts to file the bad stuff under weird dream. Then a white Jeep showed up on my block last week. Different plates, different stickers on the back, but the same kind of dust on the bumper, the same cheap aftermarket roof rack. And on the rear window, in fog that shouldn't have been there on a dry, mild evening, was a handprint. Fingers spread wide, just a little too long. I tried to ignore it. Told myself people buy decal kits or their kids messing around with greasy hands. I walked past it twice that day and pretended my stomach wasn't twisting. Yesterday, when I came home from work and climbed the stairs, I saw the strip of pail across my apartment threshold. It's subtle. If I didn't already know what to look for, I might have stepped right over it. Just a thin ring where the carpet fibers are pressed flat in a perfect arc that covers my whole doorway. I haven't crossed it yet. I'm sitting in the hallway with my back against the opposite wall, laptop propped on my knees, typing this out while my battery creeps down. My neighbors probably think that I've locked myself out, and I'm not going to correct them. I guess I'm posting this here because I don't really have anyone in my life I could tell this to without them looking at me like I'm crazy. The longer I sit here, the more I swear I could hear something on the other side of my own door. Not walking, not scratching, just breathing.